ಅಗ್ರದೇವಸ್ಯ ಧೀಮಹಿ ಧಿಯೋ ಯೋ ನ ಪ್ರಚೋದಯಾತ್. ಮೇ ಯು ಮೆಡಿಟೇಟ್ ಆನ್ ದಟ್ ಸುಪ್ರೀಂ ಬೀಯಿಂಗ್ ಹು ಡ್ವೆಲ್ಸ್ ಇನ್ ದಿ ಹಾರ್ಟ್ಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಆಲ್. He is the source and sustenance of this universe. In Him we live, move, and have our being. May He illumine our hearts and may He guide us in every way. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace, peace. We have been studying the crest jewel of discrimination by Shankara. Now you'll remember the question that was asked by the disciple. I'll remind you. What in reality is this bondage? How did it begin? In what is it rooted? How is a man set free from it? What is the non-Atman? What is the Supreme Atman? How can one discriminate between them? Please answer me. Now we find that the teacher does not answer these questions directly at all. He is explaining what religion means. And in that connection he points out that it is an experience. In other words, these questions cannot be answered and understood properly unless you have the experience for yourself. Then of course he is answering gradually to give us the intellectual understanding. But the real understanding does not come until we have the experience ourselves. You know, Sri Ramakrishna used to give the illustration. To see milk is one thing. To hear about milk is another thing. But to taste milk is the real thing. So we do not know, we would not understand the true meaning of religion. Or what is the Atman? What is non-Atman? What is this bondage? And what is freedom? You see, even the bondage that we have the direct experience of bondage. We don't always feel that bondage. But only in relationship to that freedom we can really understand what a slavery it was. But without that experience, it is not possible to actually understand or grasp it. Then, next he points out, how to gain that experience and what is that experience? Now, of course, he points out how of the steps to liberation. The first is declared to be complete detachment from all things which are non-eternal. You see, already we explained how there must be this discrimination between the eternal and non-eternal. And when that discrimination comes, when we realize and understand and are convinced that God is the only reality that is eternal, everything else is fleeting. Then, as we long for that eternal, then it is that spiritual life begins. Then you are a spiritual aspirant. So from that discrimination between the eternal and non-eternal, there must come the detachment from all things which are non-eternal. You know, the other day I found some beautiful passages in the teachings of Jesus. I'll quote to you. Just in this connection, Again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a treasure hid in a field, the which, when a man hath found, he hideth, and for joy thereof goeth, and selleth all that he hath, and buyeth that field. You see, he sells everything else, he gives up everything else, and buys that. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a merchant man seeking goodly pearls, who, when he had found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it. You see, we have to realize that he is the pearl of great price. And what is the price? We have to sell everything and buy just that one thing. Not so easy. But you know, that happens. In every one of you it will happen. Not that you will just give up externally everything and run into the woods or caves or mountains, no. But you will be completely detached from everything else. How? When you learn to love God, when you see that treasure, that buried treasure within yourself, when you even get a little fragrance of that, that treasure lies buried within each one of us. And then is it that detachment comes naturally, normally. But in the path of jnana, as Shankara teaches, and you have to reach that directly and immediately. So he tells us, be detached from everything. And Christ also points that out. You have to sell everything that you have to buy that pearl of great price. Then comes the practice of tranquility, self-control and forbearance. And then the entire giving up of all actions which are done from personal selfish desire. You see, the selfishness is to be completely wiped out. You see, ego will be there. Sense of ego will be there. But the bad ego, you see, there are two kinds of egos, ripe ego and unripe ego. Ripe ego is when you are a spiritual aspirant and struggling to realize the Atman or God. And unripe ego is that which claims yourself to be somebody, having so much intelligence, so much wealth, so much learning, so much beauty, so much youth, and you weigh so much. What a beautiful figure you have. You see, that's the unripe ego. And that we have to completely wipe out. And the sense of ego also is completely wiped out only in samadhi, in that transcendental consciousness. Until then, the sense of ego remains with us. And it is good that it remains, otherwise we will struggle. And then again, you see, after the attainment of that samadhi also, as you come back, again that sense of ego is there, but it is completely harmless. You see, as Ramakrishna would say, it has touched the philosopher's stone, and the sword, iron sword, has turned into gold, and it cannot harm. You see, without that sense of ego, for instance, how could Shankara teach and preach and write commentaries and write books? How could a Christ go and teach and preach without that sense of ego? So there is that sense of ego, and it becomes obliterated only in samadhi. After samadhi again, it comes back. But harmless. Now again, he points out that then the disciple must hear the truth of the Atman and reflect on it and meditate upon it constantly without pause for a long time. You see, that is the greatest secret my master also taught us and emphasized upon that. He said it, sahaja yoga, easy way of union with God. And what is that? That constant recollectedness of God. See, sit quietly, think of God, converse with Him, talk to Him, pray to Him, be His companion, entertain Him. While you are walking, while you are lying down, while you are driving car, while you are working, keep a part of the mind recollected in God. And then, of course, then is it that when you go and sit and meditate, you get some result out of it. You can meditate. Otherwise, if your mind is all the time somewhere else, busy, and then you go to meditate for half an hour, well, all that busy ideas and thoughts and more would crowd your mind. And so you think, now meditation is no good. It doesn't help. How can it help? So that attempt, you see, if you make the attempt to keep that constant recollectedness, at least occasionally, try it occasionally, then make it more often. And then let the current flow. And remember, when this constant recollectedness comes, then you attain wisdom, you attain samadhi. So he points out, thus the wise man reaches that highest state in which consciousness of subject and object is dissolved away, and the infinite unitary consciousness alone remains, and he knows the bliss of nirvana while still living on earth. See, that is the transcendental experience. You see, first he said, you have to experience. What is that experience? It's the transcendental experience. What is meant by transcendental experience? Well, the subject and object becomes unified. You know, you and I and everyone has experienced slightly this sense of the obliteration of subject and object relationship, in a sense. Let me give you the illustration. When you are intensely concentrated in anything, but the most the best illustration for us would be when you are reading a very interesting book, for instance, and you are absorbed in the story. And then what happens? You have forgotten who you are, but you are so absorbed in the story, you are living in the story. A sort of unitary consciousness is there. The child becoming absorbed in the play forgets everything. You go and go to the theater, and if it's an interesting play, you become so absorbed in it, you forget. In other words, whatever catches your interest, and that helps you to concentrate. And then as you become concentrated, you become absorbed. And then you see what happens. Only the experience is there. And the experience, that experience is the experience of bliss and consciousness. That experience is there. That, of course, in a higher degree, in this highest degree, subject and object relationship gone. There is the unitary consciousness. And that's what is called samadhi. You know, a scientist, for instance, how does he discover truths? When he becomes absorbed, then flashes some truth. In any business, you have to get new ideas. You become absorbed, and somewhere, from nowhere it seems, some new idea enters into you. So in some degree or other, we all have that experience in a way, but not with God. And when it is directed towards God, then, you see, that experience of samadhi comes. Complete forgetfulness and becoming absorbed in that highest. Now he's going to give us direct answer in a way. But first he's going to point out to us what is non-Atman. Now I shall explain discrimination between the Atman and the non-Atman, which you must learn, listen carefully, then realize the truth of it within your own soul, you see. Again he's emphasizing upon that truth. Realize in your own soul. I cannot give you. You have to get it for yourself within your own soul. What the seers call the gross body, you see, then he goes to explain how there is the physical body, there is a subtle body, there is a causal body, and how there is the identification with these. And through this identification with these bodies, we have become forgetful of the true self, of the Atman, and wants to enjoy our body and mind and senses, and become lost in them. And so there is first that discrimination is needed, and to detach ourselves from the body. We must consider the body only as a vehicle. And vehicle for what? To realize God. Our mind and sense organs and everything are instruments to carry us across the ocean of worldliness and take us to that shore of transcendental consciousness where we can come face to face with God. But instead of that, we become identified with these instruments and we remain under the whims of these instruments. You see, let me tell you the truth in plain words, in simple words. God is within you. You are God. You are He. That's the truth within you. And He's dwelling within this body, this temple of a body. But somebody else has usurped this temple and has dethroned God, dethroned you, your true you. Who is that? Your false you. A faker has come and usurped that throne and takes you round and round and round. That is what has happened. Now how did it happen? Because through identification. You are not the body, you are a dweller in the body, but you are identifying yourself with the body. And from that has arisen that sense of ego. You know that beautiful passage in the Upanishads, two birds of beautiful plumage. You remember? Let me try to remember myself. Two birds of beautiful plumage, beautiful golden plumage, sitting on the selfsame tree. The one bird sitting on the upper branch is calm and majestic in its own glory. The other bird, sitting on the lower branch, is hopping from one branch to another, eating and tasting the sweet and bitter fruits of the tree. When it tastes a bitter fruit, it looks at the upper bird and envies how calm, how majestic, approaches nearer, forgets again, again goes on tasting sweet and bitter fruits. Then when it has tasted a very bitter fruit, then it looks at the upper bird, approaches nearer and nearer and nearer, and then vanishes. All the time there was just one bird, and its shadow was playing all this time. You see, that is what you may call Atman or God, and this sense of ego, the individual man, just a shadow. And yet our whole world is centered around that shadow of an ego. Just think of it. Just consider one little point. When you say, I want this, I want that, I am happy, I am unhappy, or I desire for this or that. Consider, who is it? Who are you? Who are you that are desiring all these? Who are you that are wanting all these? See, what a maya. What an ignorance. I want this. I want to feed myself of all these things, enjoyments. But who am I? And so our whole world, you see, each one's world is centered around his own world, around himself. And so each one's world is centered around a shadow. And we are all living in a dream world. Imaginary world. Laughing, crying, joking, fighting, loving. You see, all in imaginary world. The reality remains forgotten. That, in short, is Shankara's philosophy, you see. And that's the truth. That will be revealed to you when you experience it for yourself. What this here is called the gross body is made up of these substances: marrow, bone, fat, flesh. You see, you all know all that. Blood, skin, and epidermis. It consists of legs, thighs, chest, arms, feet, back, head, and other parts. It is known to be the root of that delusion of I and mind. And this body. Identification with the body is the cause of all suffering and misery. And you see, this identification continues until you have the realization, the experience. So treat this body as a vehicle. As a vehicle to experience God. Body is important inasmuch as through the help of this body that is dwelling here, I will attain to the realization of God. The subtle elements are ether, air, fire, water, and earth. Portions of each of these compounded together compose the gross body. Sound, touch, sight, taste, and smell. These five essences of the elements are what we experience. They exist in order to be experienced by the individual man. Those deluded beings who are tied to the objects they experience by the strong cord of desire, so hard to break, remain subject to birth and death. They travel upward or downward, impelled by their own karma, that inseparable law. You know this, I don't need to explain because you all know that how with this sense of ego, with this identification, we remain subject to the law of karma. Upward or downward we go, we are born again and again, we go around that wheel of birth, death, and rebirth. The deer, the elephant, the moth, the fish, and the bee, each of these goes to its death under the fascination of one single sense out of the five. What then must be the fate that awaits a man who is under the fascination of all five senses? Just think of that. But of course, I don't know, you know, about the animals, how the animals have only one sense, and which sense, that means one sense is strong. But which sense is strong, I don't remember. There is something in the Bhagavatam. Yes, I begin to remember. In the deer, for instance, the sense of hearing is very strong. That means the deer loves music. And fascinated by that music, the deer gets caught. And just think, we have all the five senses strong. Fascinated by them, we are entrapped. The objects experienced by the senses are even stronger in their evil effects than the poison of the cobra. Poison kills only when it is absorbed into the body, but these objects destroy us merely by being seen with the eyes. Think of that. It's just as you look at the objects of pleasure, then what happens? If you desire, of course, then that desire has already gone into your system as poison. You don't have to eat it yet. Already the poison begins to get effect in you. Only he who is free from the horrible trap of craving for sense enjoyment, so hard to renounce, is ready for liberation, and no other, even though he may be schooled in the six systems of philosophy. That is, just by study and learning you don't get anywhere. But you have to have that freedom from sense craving. And here, you see, sense craving means again two. You see, those two that bind us. Sri Ramakrishna summed them up by saying, sex and gold. You see, to give the literal meaning of what he said, sex and gold. These are the two cravings. And that means the whole world. Worldliness is that. And so until we can overcome these two, it's not possible to realize God. But again, as I have oftentimes explained to you, that as you move towards God, everything else becomes tasteless. You see. So that craving goes away, leaves you. But it's the negative aspect. To follow the negative aspect is not possible. You can renounce something when you have something better. And so there is no pain or no credit in renunciation, I tell you that. You have got something greater, something higher. So long for that, move towards that, and then everything falls away. So-called seekers for liberation, who lack the true spirit of renunciation, try nevertheless to cross the ocean of this world. The shark of craving catches them by the throat and drags them violently from their course, and they are drowned midway. Of course, two things cannot go together. Love for God and love for the world. If you want to keep both, you are in trouble. Like it or not. You see, don't blame me. That's what all these teachers have taught, and I quoted to you what Christ also taught. He who has killed the shark of sense craving with the sword of true dispassion crosses the ocean of this world without meeting any obstacle. Know that that deluded man who walks the dreadful path of sense craving moves nearer to his ruin with every step. And know this to be true also, that he who walks with the path indicated by his teacher, who is his trust, well-wisher, and by his own better judgment, reaps the highest fruit of the knowledge of Brahman. So these are the two paths. One the path of worldliness, and the other the path of liberation. If you really desire liberation, hold the objects of sense enjoyment at a distance like poison, and keep drinking in with delight such virtues as contentment, compassion, forgiveness, straightforwardness, tranquility, and self-control as if they were nectar. Well, I'll take this up again. May I invite questions? By the way, I got a question by mail. And, of course, I expected that when they send any question or any... when I open a letter, naturally I expect who writes it. But somehow this is anonymous. And it is the same question that I already dealt with. But the questioner or the seeker, as he signs himself, is not satisfied. So I don't know if I can satisfy him. Anyway, I shall try to answer, but I am not sure if I'd be able to satisfy the seeker. I've asked the question, I'm quoting the what he has written. I've asked the question, have you ever experienced samadhi? And if so, what is it like? I've asked this question of you and Swami Vandanananda, and I've had it either unanswered or answered with, it is just like a dumb man trying to tell how candy tastes. Needless to say, I am not satisfied. I want very much to hear either or both of you tell of your own personal experiences. Testimony. Go to the Christian Science Church on Wednesday, you'll find testimony. I want very much to hear either of both of you tell of your own personal experiences in realizing and enjoying God, in order that my own fragile faith may thereby strengthen and kept alive. Suppose I change my question simply, what have been some of your own moving experiences or realizations of God? May I look for an answer to it somewhere in the lesson this Thursday night? Now, of course, you know, if you had thought a little more deeply, the answer that I already gave you, you would have been satisfied. It is just like a dumb man trying to express the taste of sweet candy. Now let me explain this answer again by telling you a parable of Sri Ramakrishna. There was a young lady, 20 years old, and she has a sister who is 5 years old. And this 20-year young lady got married, went to a honeymoon, and after she came back, this 5-year-old girl asked the young lady, young sister, what is it like to be married? What is it like, the experience with your husband? Oh, she smiled and said, oh, I was happy. Oh, but tell me how it was. Oh, you will know when you grow up. Oh, but I'm not satisfied what you are telling. I won't get married unless you tell me how it is. Well, what can the poor sister do about it? Tell me. Now again, take two young ladies having both sex experiences. Can the one even express to the other what it is like? They will smile and nod at each other. That's all they can do. Same way, in an intenser degree. You see, even the sense experience you cannot describe, you cannot make another understand, and do you expect that anybody can make you understand what this experience is like. So just remember what I said. It is just like the dumb man trying to express the taste of sweet candy. So if you are satisfied or not, well, it's up to you. I can't help. And personal experiences, you see, in spiritual life, no mystic would tell you his personal experiences unless you are very intimate and you come to him. It is not to be advertised in public. It is to be, you have to hide it. Didn't I quote to you, he hideth. You know, there is an extreme saying in India that if a man's mother is unchaste, as he keeps that very quiet and hiding, similarly, with that guarded secrecy, you must hide your own spiritual experiences. You see. How do you wipe out the unripe ego? Very good. Just discriminate and try to think of God, pray to Him, move towards Him. That's how this unripe ego will be wiped out. Now anybody who is struggling for spiritual life, is trying to practice meditation or prayer, knows how feeble he is, how helpless he is. And so he becomes humble. Then the unripe ego is wiped out. So what I would say, that unripe ego is easier to be wiped out as you begin your spiritual practices earnestly and sincerely. In the name of God, when will I gain a slow portion? In the name of God, when will I gain a slow portion? I don't get it. But mainly, what can I find? True place of mind to obtain achievement, but mainly when can I find true peace of mind to obtain achievement? I don't understand yet. When can I find true peace of mind to obtain achievement? Well, when you get peace of mind, you have already achieved the peace that passeth understanding. So I would say devote yourself to God. You see, I have one remedy for every disease. Well, that's true. So devote yourself to God. I don't know any other kind of medicine, you see. How can a householder multiply the times of meditation, and what is the shortest period it is worthwhile to meditate? Oh, it's a good question, practical question. Well, you see, what is the shortest period it is worthwhile to meditate? Fraction of a moment. if you can sincerely think of the presence of God. That's enough. If one moment you can feel the living presence of God, that's enough. But begin with 5 minutes, 10 minutes, periodically every day. Make it half an hour, then 10 hours, 24 hours. Household or monk makes no difference. The householder also, when the householder falls in love with his housewife intensely, then he is doing all the household work and at the same time constantly thinking of the housewife. After 10 minutes of trying to meditate, the mind gets restless. What to do? Well, that's a good sign. So it means that you are at least making an attempt. So what to do? Practice, practice, practice. What is meant by the school of Jino, the conqueror of temptation? I have never heard of this school. Where do you get that? Oh, you read all sorts of books and get yourself confused. Where do you find the school of Jino? In the imaginary brain of somebody. And you swallow that. And get yourself more confused. Go to the source. Read the Bible, the Sermon on the Mount. Read the teachings of Buddha. Read the teachings of Ramakrishna. They're simple. They're understandable. No mystification there. But you people like mystification, mist, what you can't understand. Jino. Who is Jino? Please explain again what you mean by God is with form and at the same time is without form. That, I'm stumped there. You see, I just tell you what those great teachers who have seen, what they teach us. I'll tell you something. How can the same substance be with form and without form? You take the ocean water. What is it? Formless. But you go to the North Pole. And what do you see? The ocean has taken form, icebergs floating. See? Or in your own refrigerator, you pour water and then it becomes solidified, takes form. Same way. Through intense cold, the water becomes solidified and takes form. So through intense devotion of a devotee, the formless, impersonal being becomes impersonal. So that's all I can say. Decimus, the good Philip, who died from crucifixion at the same time and place with Christ, made one request of Christ. He said, "Lord, remember me when you come into your kingdom." Christ answered, "This day thou shalt be with me in paradise." Decimus repented for his past life and made an act of faith all within a short period of time. Years of prayer and meditation were not his, yet Christ states that Decimus would be with him in heaven. Decimus was promised eternal union with God. the question at point is, wherein lies the necessity of reincarnation? Was there any reincarnation in the second place? Thirdly, did Dismas realize God in spite of the fact he was not a saint? Now, of course, you see, you are trying to judge the life from one short period. You see, Dismas, I don't know exactly the name, you see, I can't remember the name. All right, the thief and Christ together. The thief sees Christ and he knows he is going to die. His heart was in agony. And he saw here was the Savior. He recognized him. And naturally he went to heaven. He became a saint that moment. What is saintliness? All the sins are wiped out. That moment all the sins were wiped out. Now, you may ask, he didn't have to struggle much. How do you know? That's where reincarnation comes in. He had pre-existence and he must have struggled, so he had the good fortune to be crucified with Christ. It just didn't happen by chance. Then of course, after, you see, he sees Christ and he goes with Christ, naturally there is no reincarnation. Reincarnation is there as long as one is in ignorance. When one attains to the wisdom of God, then there is no more rebirth. Om Hari Om. Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahanau Bhunaktu Sahavirjam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. May Brahman protect us. May he guide us. May he give us strength and right understanding. May we have love for all. May our study bring light unto us. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace, peace.